We have other compounds like tannins, for example. Very recently, we put out a paper looking at a meta-analysis of tannins as additives, not just tannins as part of forages, but as additives that you consciously put into the diet. And those also have shown to reduce emissions by about 10% or so. So there are a number of those things that are available. But I think what we need is basically more data, making sure that there are no unintended consequences, long-term data, and data on the impact on the environment, on the products themselves and residues, and also on the animal health as well.
Welcome to the Dairy Health Black Belt Podcast, the latest dairy health research digested for you. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Steel, ventilation, cow cooling, cow-centric design, engineered in Canada by InBarn Solutions. Stop hiring for problems automation can solve. Start with Elevate Agents. Revenue grew, so did your hours. The owner's box, buy back 20 a week. Don't hire another VA stuck in 2015. Hire a remote AI specialist from Latin who runs AI tools, works in your time zone, and helps your team move faster. Schedule your free strategy call at www.wisevas.io. Zentrix Insights. The right person in the right seat starts with knowing how your team is actually wired. Visit ZentrixInsights.com. Zentrix OS, the business operating system built for teams who are serious about goals, tasks, and measurable results. One platform to run your entire operation.
Welcome to the Dairy Health Black Belt Podcast, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Dr. Luciano Cascetta, and I come to you with this podcast dedicated to bring you the latest insights and discussions in the dairy industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead of with today's episode. Today, I'm hosting Dr. Ermias Krabiab, who is a professor of sustainable animal systems at UC Davis. And he's a well-known scientist in our field, has been working with methane emission mitigation. And we're going to have a chance to chat with him and learn more about what he has been doing and his perspectives on the topic. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Cabral.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's nice having you here. And you have been you are a well-known person in the dairy industry and been working on this area on the realm of the methane emission and mitigation. And you have been very prolific on those research. So on your experience and from what you're doing, like, what are some of the strategies that we have available now that has some science behind to let us like to mitigate methane? Because there's a lot of things out there, they're saying that they can do this, but not always backed by science.
Yeah, that's true. I think this time we are in a good way because we have some options. There are some options that are coming up now. There's a lot of work that's been done around the world, which is really good that there is a lot of interest in this area. So there is investment happening and within different areas to have the same outcome, basically to try to reduce methane emissions in different ways. So there are those that are inhibitors that inhibit the methanogenesis, and one that has already been approved and has been used in several countries is 3-NOP. It's approved for dairy cattle in the US and in the European Union, and I believe the beef cattle approval will be coming soon as well, because we've done meta-analysis both on dairy and on beef, and kind of similar, maybe a little bit more effective on the beef side, but in general, it's pretty, they match up quite well, and there's a lot of data behind it. It's probably the most studied feed additive to reduce methane emissions. And apart from that, we also have others that have collected a lot of data as well. Seaweed being one amongst them, and not just seaweed, but bromoform-containing compounds as well. So whether it is natural bromoform or it is a synthetic bromoform, those are also becoming, there's more and more data that's coming out. And what we know is that the efficacy is not really in contention. We've done a meta-analysis on that, and we can say that depending on the dose, you can achieve 50% or more reduction in emissions. So what is really needed now is maybe missing is to look into the long-term impacts. Again, those kind of work are coming out as well. So I believe in 2026, we'll see more and more of the studies being published that has good information on how long the additive would be effective and if there is any unintended consequences and all that. So I think those would be clarified within this year. We have other compounds like tannins, for example. Very recently, we put out a paper looking at a meta-analysis of tannins as additives, not just tannins as part of forages, but as additive that you consciously put into the diet. And those also have shown to reduce emissions by about 10% or so. So there are a number of those things that are available. But I think what we need is basically more data, making sure that there are no unintended consequences, long-term data, and data on the impact on the environment, on the products themselves and residues, and also on the animal health as well.
WiseNetX turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access WiseNetX.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
Yeah, and then on this like long-term data that you mentioned, is that saying like you use the product for a certain amount of time and like there's like an effect of it stays with the animal for longer since you stop feeding those additives?
Yes, exactly. So what happens when you do controlled experiments is that normally it's about 3 to 4 months. That is sort of the normal duration of the controlled experiments. But obviously, you want to use this throughout the animal's lifetime. And so what we would like to see is that, does it translate? You know, is there any time where there would be adaptation to the intervention, whether microbial or otherwise? And so we need to know over a longer period of time whether it is if a dairy is over a lactation or two lactations if it stays, and then if it is a beef cattle maybe from weaning up to the harvest time, when you continuously give this interventions, whether there is any unintended consequences that we did not pick up when we did this efficacy trials in a controlled environment. So that's really the main reason is that over a long period of time, does it hold? What we see in 4 months, does it hold in, say, 18 months?
Yeah, it's good. Like we had hosted a few other people talking in similar manner or similar realm, right, of the discussion here in the podcast. And some of them were talking about the genetic selection for cattle. They're more efficient, so they're trying to go that route. Now we have this feed additives, and we also know that some management strategies can like be very useful and helpful on achieving this this goal. So is there any of these strategies there like better? Are they complementary? Like how do you see those playing a role?
Yeah, so definitely there are some complementary ideas that would be on a long term would be very, very useful. For example, the breeding and selecting animals for low methane, I think it has a long-term good strategy because once you achieve that, it is cumulative and you don't have to worry about like feed additive to give it on a daily basis. So over a longer period of time, you will have animals that are naturally low emitting. The window that we have for that is limited because you're really relying on the animal to animal variation, so what that naturally exists, and it may not be over 20% differences there. So you should be able to pick up those things, and it has been shown in New Zealand with sheep, for example, that you are able to come up with a breed of sheep that would have less methane, about 12% or so methane than sort of the control animals. So this is definitely a worthwhile thing to do because, as I said, you know, a lot of the animals, once you have this, it will be, you don't need to do any other extra intervention. And particularly for grazing animals, this is really important because a lot of the grazing animals, you won't be able to see them on a daily basis to give them feed additives and that. So if you already have something like that, then it would be easy to implement. And others like vaccines also would be quite important because, again, most animals get vaccinated for one thing or another. And if you add this antimethanogenic vaccine there as well, then you can reach a lot more animals than you would do with feed additives. So those kind of things would work. And in low-income countries, low-middle-income countries, feed additives and others may not be as important because we do have quite a big productivity gap. And if you are able to close that productivity gap, then it would be good for the farmers. It would be good for the environment because for a kilogram of milk or per unit of meat or any animal product, you have less amount of methane. So before we go into other kind of interventions in those countries where 80% of emissions is coming from. So the focus there is to really increase the productivity and reduce the emission intensity. And that's what was achieved in the US and Europe and other Western countries was basically improvement in the productivity and breeding, nutrition, management, all of that contributed to animals having a better outcome. And then per unit of production, they have much less now. So the US, for example, reduced dairy herd from 25 million to 9 million over the last 50 years. But the milk production, the total milk production has actually increased. But if you look at the unit per kilogram of milk or per liter of milk, now we have much, much less emissions than we have before, like 50% less emissions than we had before. So that's where sort of the big jump could happen in low and middle income countries in the short term.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting because this brings to like a topic that and a question that we usually have. And there's a lot of misconception around the methane emission and what's the impact and what really it's out there. So what are some of those most challenging misconception that you as one of the leading experts on this topic has been facing, and what are basically the myth busters like to respond to it, right?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I noticed is that how much contribution that animals really have on the methane emission on the environment. And I teach this course on sustainable animal production, and I ask students before we start to just guess what is the contribution of animals, and they usually come up way, way higher, about 30-40% and all that. So I think people are thinking that the contribution of enteric methane, particularly from ruminants, is much, much larger than what actually is. And it really depends on where you are also. Like in the U.S., for example, the contributions are 2-3% or lower, while in other places where they have higher amount of livestock and not as productive, then that contribution goes higher. But you know, overall, global basis, 14.5% from livestock, and you know, including a lot of the things, not just enteric, but other emissions as well. And that also includes the land use change as well. So if you take that out, it goes even smaller. So yeah, it's important. You know, it's important enough for us to worry and to do something about it. But then we have to put it into perspective as well.
Yeah, no, that's something. It's good to make that clear and to bring that up as much as we can, because yeah, we hear it. There's a lot of pushback and there's a lot of things that we hear, and that sometimes it's just not the truth or the reality. So it's good to hear this. So in the interest of time and to our listeners, we're coming up to the end of our podcast. size podcast, which is a shorter one. I'm really glad that we had the chance to catch up with you and like learn a little bit more and hear from you and your perspective. And looks like it seems like there's a lot of new things will come up and a lot of opportunity on this field.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a very, very exciting time for working in this field because, as you said, there are a lot of different ways in which we can make an impact. And on a monthly basis, you can see a lot of papers being published. And I think what we need to do now is from the research into the field and actually applying those solutions.
And it seems that we're much closer to that point than we were like even just like 2 years ago. So that's it's a good progress. Yeah, thank you for your time and thank you for coming here and like sharing your knowledge and your perspectives with our listeners.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
This concludes another episode of the Dairy Health Black Belt Podcast presented to you by Wisenetics. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a message, a review, send us feedback if you have any topics that you'd like us to discuss in the future. And I'll see you next time. This is the Dairy Health Black Belt Podcast, and I'm Luciano Cascetta. Thank you. Bye.